The UGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 342, recorded on February 25th, 2014. Welcome to the 342nd edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and 175th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Jonah Falcon.
And I am Jordan Lund.
VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry, gaming flashback, and game history. Do we have a gaming history? No, not this week. So there's no gaming history, just a gaming flashback.
Yeah.
So, last week's episode was recorded. It wasn't the greatest quality, and frankly, it was dull as dishwater, so I just decided, never mind. The news wasn't really all that important. Which is, you know, it's to be understood because it's February, you know?
Yeah, there's not a lot going on this time of year.
But I think this is the start of something going on because two huge games have been released. Well, one huge, the other one sort of huge. Thief was released today, and I've been playing Thief on the PC, and I've completed like one and a half mission, well, tutorial and one and a half missions, and it's pretty thiefy. I mean, Garrett is a little more aggressive this time around. He's not going to be able to take on a bunch of guards at once, but he can handle himself a little better. But then again, I spent the time being a ghost, and that's one of the nice things about the game is that it tracks the way you play. So it viewed me as an opportunist, which meant I was knocking people out, but I wasn't killing them. I was just picking my spots. Ghost means you don't touch anything. No one even knows you were there. But I was playing on regular difficulty level, so I just wanted to get through the game.
Now I've been reading the reviews of Thief and they haven't been exactly kind. You know, the general consensus is go play Dishonored again.
Yeah, here's the thing. Yeah. Dishonored is not Thief, and Thief is not Dishonored. Right. I'd like someone who's actually played the 1999 game, a 1998 game or the 2000 game, because Thief is something different. Thief is more voyeuristic,
Gotcha.
And it's not supposed to be an action game. And, They were probably two years old when it came out.
The other complaint was that the combat stinks, and my thought was, well, if you're getting into combat in Thief, you're doing it wrong.
Yeah, what? Reviews complaining about combat in Thief?
Yeah.
That reminds me, back on the computer games online thing, one guy piped up and said, listen, I keep on attacking these guys, the first Thief, and I keep on losing. What can I do? And the thing is, you don't attack anybody. That's not what it's for.
If you continue making the same choices, expecting a different outcome,
The game Garrett even says at the very beginning, I don't kill anybody.
Right.
I don't kill unless it's necessary. And, in the game, it's generally, you can go through the entire game without ever killing one person. Not a single person.
Well, exactly. Yeah.
You can actually go through the game without anybody even knowing you were there, apparently. But I'm not that specific. One of the things about Thief, by the way, is that people have also complained that you're helped too much, but you can turn off everything. You can turn off the focus sense. You can turn off the map. You can turn off the mini map. You can turn off any sort of help whatsoever and play on hardest level. So all you have no HUD, you have no light gem even. That's the way to play if you want no help whatsoever.
Gotcha.
I've been trying focus. It's not imbalanced. I mean, for me, focus is useful in that I don't want to have to hunt through the darkness to find stuff. And oh, there it is. Okay. It's just like, it's taking a lot of the pain out of some of the games. It's like, okay, fine. There it is. Good. I will say, though, in the first level, right after the tutorial level, they give you a level in which there's thunder and lightning. And it's like awfully difficult for the first level in that, you have guards around and it's lightning so that if you happen to be caught in the light, when they'll see you. So it's sort of like, yeah, you're going to start at this difficulty right now already?
It's a very steep ramp is what you're saying.
Well, on the other hand, this is the way it was, kiddies. You know, if you can't stand, go play Super Mario Brothers, and I let the game play it for you. The other game that came out was Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare. I have not picked it up yet. I intended to. I'll probably pick it up tomorrow. This is a game I'm really looking forward to. Although it's online only, there is a horde mode so that you can do co-op with people. I found out, here's one thing about co-op mode. It does not scale up. So if you play by yourself in co-op mode, you're dead. You're dead because monsters that are generating for four people are just attacking one person.
Right, right.
And this, you know, the thing is that these characters, it's like Halo. They move slowly. You know, I'm not saying like they move like sludge, but they don't zip around the screen like you know, like other shooters. You know, no, it's like Master Chief level of speed. So you have to be very cagey. You know. So I'm going to be picking it up. It's a real iffy if it's going to catch on. But, you know, since it has the co-op mode and the co-op mode is very challenging, it's sort of like so long as you have four friends who are playing it, you're not going to be in trouble. You know,
isn't it free to play as well?
No,
I seem to remember hearing something about it being free to play.
That was Plants vs. Zombies 2.
Gotcha.
That was the actual sequel. So if you do pick it up, I'll buy you a live card.
I still have I burned a 2-week card when Titanfall the beta came out. So I think I still have a couple days left.
Titanfall is repeatedly online only, but it does have a single player campaign mode.
It does not have a single player.
No, I mean it has a campaign mode. That's sort of
it has kind of a campaign mode, but you still have to be online to access it.
Yeah, it's interesting that way. Actually, it's sort of like Brink. Now that I think about it.
Exactly. Yeah. You know? No, I picked up the DLC for Infamous Festival of Blood.
Oh, the Halloween DLC, yeah.
And went through that where Cole becomes a vampire, and that was kind of hilarious. I've been hearing good things about Strider. I have not yet picked up Strider.
I keep on hearing, at some point I'm going to have to get, you know, Far Cry 3 Blood Dragon, mm-hmm. sort of like a reference to the old 80s games, you know, and it's a total mod for Far Cry 3 in which, you know, it's like completely batshit crazy, you know,
right.
with a lot of references to Predator and Tron and all that.
I want to take a look and see if there's any demos for Strider. I guess it's available on all the usual platforms.
Remember when
one of my friends highly recommended it, but he played it on PC.
Remember when all demos in all arcade games had a demo on the Xbox 360?
I remember that. Yes,
it was only like 3 months ago.
No,
and now it's like, if we want to release a demo, release a demo. Whatever. Nowadays,
what they're doing instead of doing a demo is they're waiting for interest in the game to wane, and they're either giving it away for free on PlayStation Plus or the games with gold package on the Xbox.
Well, the thing is that's how it used to be. I mean, that's what, you know, they released the Sid Meier Classics on Humble Bundle, and I could have gotten Civ 5 and all the DLC for $12 along with other Civ stuff, but you know, early adopter tax. So,
right.
I still have not played the iPad game Republic. I mean, I got the code because I realized I should have gotten the code for backing it on Kickstarter. So, do you remember that, I think it was a PlayStation 2 game in which you only indirectly controlled a girl? You were in this, like, control thing, and you told her...
Aiko.
No. You were in this control panel, and there was this girl, not, you know, this woman, you know, and you told her where to go. You know, but you had no control over. And I forgot the name of that game. And I think Republic is something like that.
Are you thinking of, what was it? One of the Silent Hill, The Room, or something like that?
No. It was something completely else. So anyway, and the thing is that one of the reviewers I know, Kevin Van Ord, is actually playing The Order of the Stick. What am I saying? Is actually playing South Park, The Stick of Truth.
The Stick of Truth.
It's coming out next week.
And I heard it went gold, so yeah, I'm that's something that's on my radar as well.
Ubisoft is selling for $60 on Steam.
Yeah. My wife really wants to play it, but she refuses to play as Cartman, and I had to explain to her, it's a role-playing game.
No, you play as the new kid.
Yeah, you play as the new kid.
And the thing is that you start under Cartman's, right?
Right.
But at some point, you can switch sides and join Stan,
right.
The high Jew elf. High elf Jew. I'm sorry. And, you know, that's appealing to me in that you don't play as one of the four characters. You actually play as a new character. That's what was great about the Penny Arcade Adventures.
Right.
Played alongside Gabe and Tycho. I just wish the second episode had done well enough that they could have continued in the same so you could continue the story with that. But then, you know, Z-Boy took care. And, you know, their Cthulhu game is great. But, you know, I would have liked to have seen, you know, one that was still in the same style as the first two games. So, so the thing is that since it's 2014 and there's a 10-year minimum, you know, between releases that you do for the gaming flashback. Now we're doing 2004 games, and this game is one of the biggies, not only in just you know, for that year, but actually for video game history. Actually,
gaming flashback: Half-Life 2. Half-Life 2, the sequel to Half-Life, is a first-person shooter video game and part of the Half-Life series. Developed by Valve Corporation, it was initially released on November 16, 2004, following a protracted 5-year, $40 million development cycle, during which a substantial part of the project was leaked and distributed on the internet. Like its predecessor, Half-Life 2 is a single-player first-person shooter broken into several chapters, permanently casting the player as the protagonist, Gordon Freeman. The sequel has nearly the same mechanics as Half-Life, including health and weapon systems and periodic physics puzzles, except with the newer source engine and improved graphics. The player also starts without items, slowly building up an arsenal over the course of the game. Despite the game's mainly linear nature, much effort was put into making exploration rewarding and interesting. Many optional areas can be missed or avoided. A diverse set of enemies are present, which usually require being approached with different tactics. Some coordinate in groups to outmaneuver or outposition the player. Others, like the Manhack, fly directly at the player through small openings and tight corridors. Some use predictable but powerful attacks, while others hide before swiftly attacking the player. Gordon can kill most enemies with his weapons or make use of indirect means, exploiting environmental hazards such as explosive pressurized canisters, gas fires, or improvised traps. At one point in the game, Gordon can be joined by up to 4 armed resistance soldiers and can send his team further from him or call them back. However, they can still easily die due to a lack of damage protection. Squad members are indicated on the HUD. Squad member icons with a cross sign are field medics. Many of the game's new features utilize its detailed physics simulation. 2 sections of the game involve driving vehicles. Instead of button-based puzzles from Half-Life, environmental puzzles are also introduced with makeshift mechanical systems revolving around the player's new ability to pick up, move, and place objects. Solutions involve objects' physical properties such as shape, weight, and buoyancy. For example, in Chapter 3, Root Canal, the player is required to stack cinder blocks on a makeshift seesaw ramp to proceed over a wall. Partway through the game, Gordon acquires the gravity gun, which allows him to draw distant objects towards himself or forcefully push them away, as well as to manipulate larger and heavier objects than he is able to do alone. These abilities are required to solve puzzles later in the game and can be also used to great effect in combat, as any non-static object within proximity to the player has the potential to be used as a makeshift defense, for example, a file cabinet or a deadly projectile, a gasoline can or a buzzsaw blade. The game never separates the player with pre-rendered cutscenes or events. The story proceeds via exposition from other characters and in-world events and ensures that the player controls Gordon for the entirety of the game. Much of the backstory to the game is simply alluded to or told through the environment. For Half-Life 2, Valve Corporation developed a new game engine called Source, which handles the game's visual, audio, and artificial intelligence elements. An Xbox port published by Electronic Arts was released on November 15, 2005. While subject to positive reception, critics cited its lack of multiplayer and frame rate issues as problems, and the game received somewhat lower scores than its PC counterpart. During Electronic Arts' summer press event on July 13, 2006, Gabe Newell, co-founder of Valve Corporation, announced that Half-Life 2 would ship on next-generation consoles, specifically the Xbox 360 and PlayStation 3, along with Episodes 1 and 2, Team Fortress 2, and Portal in a package called The Orange Box. The Windows version was released October 10, 2007, as both retailed copy and as a download available through Valve's Steam service. The Xbox 360 version was also released on October 10th, 2007. A PlayStation 3 version was released on December 11th, 2007. Half-Life 2 was highly acclaimed by both the public and critics alike. Forbes reported on February 9th, 2011 that the game had sold 12 million copies. It received an aggregated score of 96% on both game rankings and Metacritic.
Yeah, 96%, that's stratospheric.
That's a huge deal, yeah, particularly with the number of reviews that were coming in.
Yeah. The thing about Half-Life 2, it really hasn't aged well. I mean, the big thing about it were the physics puzzles, but now, if even just a few years after the physics, it becomes tedious doing the physics puzzles. Oh, I got to put these cinder blocks on one side of the seesaw so I can go up on here. And the long, long, long vehicles, they just were interminable. I mean...
I think that was part of the problem that I had with the game. I came to it late, long since after everybody was talking about it, and I didn't really understand the appeal. I've started it multiple times. I've never finished it.
You know what? This is a game, and it's impossible for you to understand it, but there were some magnificent set pieces. I mean, that's what Half-Life, both Half-Life 1 and 2 did really well, were the set pieces, you know, in which you had situations like... like when you're on the boat and you're being attacked by that helicopter, which is spewing out bombs all over the place, and all these bombs go off realistically and physically, so it's like you're doom, 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 boom, boom, as they come closer and closer and closer as they explode. I mean, and of course, who doesn't? I mean, even you had to admit, have to admit that the opening introduction was brilliant.
The opening introduction where you're walking through turnstiles?
No, where the G-Man greets you, you know?
I don't. Well, yeah. That's a cutscene.
It wasn't exactly a cutscene. Yeah. But, and, yeah. You know, the thing is that, I mean, you know, even just walking through the turnstiles, I mean, getting the sense of the place, you know, City 17, and having having Robert Culp talk to you.
I was bored silly. I played it as long as I could stand it. And yeah, I was just bored silly by
cat.
It. I never saw a cat.
No. It's about what happened to the cat in the transporter. Oh, you never played with dog?
I never saw any of that.
Robot dog who you play fetch with? Everybody
no,
loves
I never,
that moment.
I never got
you
know,
that means
far.
You never got to hold the gravity gun. That was the big thing.
No,
about
I never
it as well.
I never got to the gravity gun.
Yeah.
I got as far as like the first gunfight and I was bored silly, so I never went back to it.
So now you of course, the orange box, which will be a separate discussion at some point,
they need to do an orange box 2 that has version 3 of everything in it. That would be awesome.
Team Fortress 3?
Team Fortress 3.
Portal 3.
Portal 3.
Yeah, well.
Half-Life 3.
You know, but you know...
Half-Life 2, Episode 3.
Yeah, but you know Valve's learning disability, right?
Well, that's what it makes it brilliant. They release it as Orange Box 2, and they don't have to count to 3.
Yeah. Anyway, but the thing is that, you know, I actually find the first Half-Life a lot more... Because the AI in Half-Life 2 wasn't all that good either. You know, the article claims that... No, it wasn't. Because in the first Half-Life, you know, the soldiers would try to flank you. They try to flush you out with grenades. They actually acted intelligently. In this, the Combine just run at you. You know?
Right.
The thing is that the one thing is that everybody remembers, and you never got to play the scene, but Ravensholm, which was rated one of the scariest levels ever in any video game, in which you had the fast zombies and the howling and just the murk, you know? And the way you enter it, it's like you're forced to go through, and Alex is really, and she's just watching you. Now, I knew that Half-Life 2 was in development before any else, because I saw this blurb that the developers at the Valve had come to New York and went to NYU to talk to behavioral scientists about facial animation and how, you know, people communicate with just their face, you know. And that was one of the big things about Half-Life 2, was that they were expressing emotions at you, you know, without having to talk at all, you know, and subtle emotions, you know, not just a big smile on their face, you know, just a furrow of the brow or you know, just a movement of the cheek. So, you know, and like I said, there's been a lot of teasing about Half-Life 3 as well.
Right.
You care. So anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Twitch coming to Xbox One in March 11th. And this comes to us from actually Twitch, because Twitch sent the email. Twitch sent an email to journalists announcing that the live stream service would officially debut on the Xbox One on March 11th. The letter read, "It's official. On March 11th, Twitch broadcasting comes to the Xbox One, but that's not all. Along with broadcasting functionality, the updated Twitch app for Xbox One gets an enhanced viewing experience as well. Chat, following, and notifications all coming in the update. With all this new stuff, let's jump onto the particulars. Gamers can instantly live broadcast our games by simply speaking Xbox Broadcast or launch from within the Twitch app for the Xbox One. I get nervous if I do that, even if my Xbox One is off, because I'm worried if I say Xbox anything, it's just going to turn on and say, what? You want me to do something? They will then position the webcam pip, the picture-in-picture, in any corner of the screen that to best fit your game. Players can then view live gameplay from any Twitch source, the Xbox One, the Xbox 360, PC, PlayStation 4, etc. I find that hilarious. Hey, let's go watch my Twitch broadcast of Titanfall on the PlayStation 4.
Yeah, you could absolutely do that. The Twitch stream on the PlayStation 4 does all kinds of interesting things. They've had people holding up devices to the camera and streaming Vita games over Twitch.
The thing that really bothers me, and this has to do with the Xbox One and the PlayStation 4, is that neither machine were ready. They absolutely were not ready.
It depends on how you define ready, right? If you're talking about basic media stuff that we've come to expect from the PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360, absolutely not ready. If you want to talk in terms of game lineup, absolutely not ready. They needed to have both platforms needed to have
it wasn't
many
their
more
fault that
many more games available.
It wasn't their fault that Ubisoft said, "Oh, guess what? Watch Dogs not ready for launch."
Yeah, that's true.
That was the big heavy hitter.
Even Watch Dogs would have only been one title, right?
Yeah, but it was a new title. I mean, as great as Assassin's Creed 4 is, it was released months before, right?
It was, yeah.
Let's see, what other launch titles were there? Peggle 2, it wasn't technically a launch title, but Peggle 2 is still a small game. Dead Rising 3, I guess, fits the nature of being a first party, a good first party launch game. How far have you gotten in Dead Rising 3, by the way?
I haven't really gotten far into it at all. It doesn't appeal to me.
Oh, okay. Well, you could always sell it. I mean,
yeah, I might. It's one of those day one editions. So.
Ooh, but you didn't use the code, did you?
I don't remember.
No, because they come with a code.
Yeah, I know they come with the code. I can't remember.
At some point we have to. Well, maybe before you sell it, we could play co-op just to see. Twitch was supposed to be something that was launching with the Xbox One.
Well, Twitch was supposed to launch with the Xbox One, and the PlayStation 4 was supposed to have other ways of sharing media besides Twitch. And neither one of those actually seemed to have worked out.
Well, Xbox One did have the DVR at the very least.
Right.
And that because when you go into your friend's activity, the DVR is all over the place. It just lets you know right away.
And the PlayStation 4 can do that too, but only with Facebook. You can't. There's no other way to share it other than Facebook.
Here's the thing is that March 11th. What's coming out on March 11th? Oh, right. Titanfall.
Yeah.
Funny. And also, that update. Now, by the way, people who are playing Titanfall said they didn't realize how gimped the party feature was on the Xbox One, compared to the Xbox 360.
It was a disaster. Does the update come out on the 11th as well?
Yes, all of this is coming out at the same time.
I thought it was the week before.
No, you see, what we got, I think, was some sort of prep for it.
Gotcha.
But the thing is that, even the simplest stuff, when you're old, when the Xbox 360 outdoes the Xbox One in terms of social interaction, you've got a problem.
Yeah.
For God's sake, I hope, and I think it's supposed to be included, that they have that thing in which you get a notification when a friend logs in. That's the simplest thing, and neither the Xbox One nor the PS4 have that. Say, hey, your friend just logged in.
Right.
Don't you enjoy it on the Xbox 360, I guess, when you see, oh, he just logged in,
Yeah, I do see that from time to time.
Now, here's the other thing. They said that the Twitch app, which is probably going to be a, by the way, that's also a problem they said, is that the snap, right? In order to get rid of the snap, it's almost universally have to do a voice command. Isn't that kind of awkward? Because they said they all had to say Xbox unsnap at the same time while talking in the Titanfall beta. That's kind of awkward, isn't it? Everybody's saying Xbox unsnap.
It is a little bit, yeah.
And the thing is, they say that you can move around the Twitch app on the screen, and hopefully that means you can move around the Snap app on the screen now. I hope that's a part of it.
Yeah, I don't know. It would be nice to have kind of like a floating window or something like that.
A floating window. I mean, I like Snap. It's just, I've seen TV picture-in-picture do better.
Right.
You know, I mean, none of these consoles are ready for the prime time. But on the other hand, they had no other choice. I've already said this, though. It baffles me that they've been working on these two machines for 3 years, at the very least, and they come out three quarters baked. You know?
I mean, it seemed amazing to me what they were surprised over, right? On the PlayStation side,
CDs are last gen technology. Yeah, but we still own CDs. Oh, you right. Live music streaming, and you're sorry. What?
Yeah. You want to be able to use a media server? How about Rockstar, this? How about a remote control?
How annoyed do you think Rockstar is the fact that you really can't do personalized radio stations? Because that's the big thing about, you know, Grand Theft Auto 3 and 4 was that you could take your ripped stuff and use it.
Make your own radio station. Right, right.
You can't rip on the Xbox One or PS4. I don't understand how that could... It's last-gen technology. So is Rumble, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Now, you were saying...
No, I agree. And it, you know, the whole bit over both Microsoft and Sony being surprised at what people are asking them to do, like all of a sudden they're just now finding out, like they didn't bother doing any market research or talk to any gamers during the 3.5 years. And now all of a sudden it's all coming out right after launch. Like, oh, people use this to stream videos to their television?
I don't know what Sony's fault is, but I know what was the problem with the Xbox One. And it's increasingly obvious what was wrong. You had way too many people who were not involved with video games trying to get their fingers in this profitable part of Microsoft. It can be the crown jewel, you know, even more than Windows and even more than their business apps. You know, it's like this thing was making money, and all of a sudden the executives, who never really paid that much attention, now have their eyes in it and they want to suggest things. And
we saw that with the original push, right, where it was all TV, 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 sports, sports, TV, TV, TV.
That did work. But what I'm saying is that, let's have it so that, you know, the always online thing, right, and let's enforce that.
Right.
Oh, let's, you know.
People have no understanding of the industry trying to make things happen in the industry.
And the thing is,
it's a recipe for disaster.
But here's the thing is that, you know, and this goes for the same for the PS4, they remove features that people liked from the previous console, and I don't understand that.
Yeah.
You know, what was wrong with it? You know, if there's the old saying, if it ain't broke, you know.
Well, you know, it. That's
not to say I have any buyer's remorse, by the way.
In terms of like audio playback or DVD playback or Blu-ray playback, there's probably licensing involved that allowed that to happen.
Come on. How much licensing can there be for CDs at this point in time?
Well, not so much for licensing for CDs, but licensing to be able to rip CDs. I'm sure the RIAA wants a piece of the action on something to do with that.
Well, fine, you can't rip your CDs. You still should be able to play them. DVD players play CDs, for crying out loud.
That's true. And Blu-ray players do as well.
Yeah, except for this
except,
one. Except, for the,
except
one that's
the PlayStation
the
4 and the Xbox One.
I mean, when I stuck in a Blu-ray, and it didn't have to be a Blu-ray, it could have been just a DVD, but I happened to stick in a Blu-ray, to be told, oh, wait a minute, I got to download the software for the Blu-ray player. I was like, what? You know, and I heard the same thing as for the PS4. You want to play a Blu-ray or a DVD? Yep, first it's got to download the software to do it.
Yes, there's a day one download on the PlayStation 4 to enable.
It's just baffling. I mean, you know. So anyways, we're going to move on to the next item, and this one's a little bit even more disturbing. Go ahead, Jordan.
Microsoft appoints Stephen Elop to head Xbox. This comes to us from Games Industry Biz. With Microsoft acquiring Nokia's device and services division, Stephen Elop is back in the fold, and the former Nokia CEO, who had been a candidate to take over for Steve Ballmer, Satya Nadella got the job, is now about to lead Microsoft's devices and studios division, which is home to entertainment, games, Xbox, and Surface. The news comes today from an internal memo by Microsoft Executive Vice President Julie Larson-Green, obtained by TechCrunch.
Now hold on one second. Did we ever discuss the acquisition of Nokia? I think we alluded to it. We never really discussed it.
We never really talked about
it. So, Jordan, go ahead and give a one-paragraph you know, recap of that?
I don't know anything about it. It doesn't involve gaming, so I never followed it.
Okay. Well, moving on.
Larson Green revealed that she's taking up a new role to lead the My Life and Work team in the Applications and Services Group, serving as Chief Experience Officer.
Okay, you know, time out. Microsoft, can you please give your division's real names that are actually descriptive? My Life and Work team. What, are they going to start doing a morning show on CBS?
She's the CEO of My Life and Work.
Yeah. Well, what about My Life and Work? Is it going to talk about My Life and Work?
Quote, as hard as it is for me to leave devices and studios, I'm thrilled about this opportunity. I want to thank each and every one of you for welcoming me and supporting me as the leader of devices and studios over the past 7 months. I'm very proud of what we've accomplished during such a short time frame. We launched Xbox One, Surface 2, and Pro 2, blockbuster games like Forza and Rise, a brand new Xbox music and video service, PPI, and some amazing unannounced innovations, just to name a few. Incredibly impressive,
wait,
she wrote.
Move on. Have you played Rise?
I've not played Rise.
Do you like
now.
Dynasty Warriors?
It was okay.
Well, you know, I think Ryzen might be a good rent for you because
it
Ryzen
might,
is basically
I haven't found a place that rents them yet, but yeah.
Gamefly. I mean.
Oh, okay.
But the thing is that, you know, Ryzen is basically a really beautiful tech demo version of Dynasty Warriors.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Larson Green added that she's looking to make the transition in the Xbox group as smooth as possible. Quote, I'll remain in the role leading
okay,
the DNS organization. Oh, okay. Sorry. Ironically, back in November, when Elop was still in the running for the Microsoft CEO position, it was reported that he would consider selling off the Xbox business, and now he's going to be overseeing it.
Yeah, that's such a gives you such a thrill, isn't it? One guy says, "Yeah, I'm just going to sell this stuff off to other people because we want." You know, I believe the DC executive said they wanted to get out of the home thing and stick with business applications.
Well, what it was is you have an executive who understands mobile very well. Like the obviously the former head of Nokia, right? So he knows what he knows, and stuff that he doesn't know, he's scared of and wants to get rid of, and that included the Surface as well.
Yeah, but the thing is that he was part of Nokia, and then he was a part of the Windows Phone. And that crashed and it didn't crash and burn. It's and you really can't blame Microsoft for that because it's extremely hard to break into, you know, get your foot in the door. I mean, I think they did reasonably well. I mean, because there's some really good Windows phones, but
the Lumia phones are supposed to be very good, and you know they have very very high end cameras in them and stuff like that. I haven't actually used one.
There's the other brand. Jeez, I'm trying to remember it. But Nokia does actually make the Windows Phone as well.
Right. That's the Lumia.
The HTC Windows Phone is supposed to be excellent.
Gotcha.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, the HTC phone is supposed to be bleeding edge Windows phones. Anyways, but the thing is that, you know, I don't feel comfortable owning a console with someone who previously said, we don't need it. Just sell it off.
Yeah, it doesn't really give confidence in that the guy running the show now is somebody that wanted to get rid of it.
I mean, look at the previous guy, Don Matrick. He was already one step out the door when he was dealing with the Xbox One, and he was just saying incredibly offensive, but rude stuff that, you don't need it because if you don't want to have it always online, then you can just buy the Xbox 360, and it became obvious in hindsight that he was looking at Zynga and really didn't care about the Xbox One. I mean, isn't
there... Right. And, you know, saying things like, well, what's your problem? You live on a submarine?
I mean, at some point, you need someone who actually likes the product that, or is into the product that you're selling. I mean, and here's my question. Where is Phil Harrison in all of this? I mean, wouldn't he be the logical person to head the Xbox division?
Phil Harrison from Sony?
Well, no, he's with Microsoft now. He was signed by Microsoft. He's the guy who oversees the European stuff. Phil Harrison, yes. Phil Harrison was fired from Sony a long time ago, or he left Sony a long time ago.
I guess I don't remember that.
We talked about it.
I don't remember it. Sorry. I've got a lot of stuff going on, dude.
Yeah. Anyways.
I can't place the name with executives. I don't follow executives obsessively.
We went on about this in quite detail a couple of months ago.
Well, it's a couple of months ago.
Okay, well, you know what? I wonder if this article is going to make you angry. King files to abandon controversial candy trademark in U.S., and this comes from Ars Technica. It seems that the Candy Crush saga maker King may have realized it reached too far in trying to claim a trademark on the common dictionary word candy. The company confirmed that it has filed for a quote-unquote expressed abandonment of the trademark, as noted by a request on file for the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office. This may seem like a victory for those who opposed King's attempt to take hold of a common word, whose use in games actually predates Candy Crush Saga by a good margin, including those behind the hilarious Candy Jam making competition. But King says that the withdrawal only came about because the company was able to acquire an older, more specific trademark that it feels gives its game adequate protection. King has withdrawn its trademark application for candy in the U.S., which we applied for in February 2013, before we acquired the rights, early rights to Candy Crusher, the company said. In a statement, each market that King operates is in a different regard with the IP. We feel that having the rights to Candy Crusher is the best option for protecting Candy Crush in the U.S. market. This does not affect our EU trademark for candy, and we continue to take all appropriate steps to protect our IP. King's acquisition of the Candy Crusher mark caused a stir of its own later this month when the trademark was wielded to shut down a similar game called Candy Swipe. Even though Candy Swipe predates King's Candy Crush saga by a couple of years, King was able to use the 2004 trademark it acquired for Candy Crusher to go after the title Candy Swipe, which was still available and is still available in the Google Play Store, where it has been flooded with five-star reviews, much of it highlighting the trademark issues surrounding the game. King also continues to back legal opposition to indie game maker Stoic Studios over the title of its game, The Banner Saga. Stoic said last month it would be going forward with a sequel for the game as planned, despite King's legal attempts to stop it. The developer said, "We won't make a Viking saga without the word saga, and we don't appreciate anyone telling us we can't." Two things. One that's sort of reminiscent of Bethesda trying to trademark Scrolls.
Right.
And two, Candy Crush Saga is a complete and utter ripoff of Candy Swipe, right down to the characters.
Down to the characters and the color scheme and all of that good stuff. Absolutely, yeah. I'm surprised that the Candy Swipe people haven't had the trademark nulled and voided by now.
Yeah, I mean, and the thing is that I read, there was this article in, now one thing about one thing that's not in this article is that King is going public, right? It's going to start selling stock. And someone from Games Industry Biz said, stay away. And they went on with the parallels to Zynga, right? And basically they said it's a one-hit wonder and all that stuff. Something that I said was, not the King is a lot like Margaret from Throw Mama from the Train. She stole his novel and is milking it for all it's worth, but she has no other creative ability. Everything else that King has done has been a big flop. Right.
Right. And it's reminiscent of Zynga in that, you know, they appeal to a casual class of gamer. The casual class of gamer is very fickle and they will be moving on to something else, Flappy Bird or whatever it is.
Well, I don't think
and
that's
when
fair,
that happens, this developer will be left high and dry.
I don't think it's a fair because Zynga did have multiple stuff that people actually did play. I mean,
they had multiple things, but they were all kind of clones of each other, right?
Well, sort of.
Yeah.
But the thing is that, you know, one other thing about Candy Crush Saga is that we were complaining about this in the last episode with Paul, and that is it demands money from you after a certain number of levels. There's no money. You want to play more? Give us money. And apparently right. It works. I have Candy Swipe. I don't have to worry about it demanding money every second of the game, you know?
I haven't played either of them. Neither really appeals to me. But, you know, the whole notion that you're going to trademark candy, I'm sorry, Candyland predates that by about 60 years. So, you know, there are certain levels of ridiculousness that comes to this.
I'm games that have candy.
I'm glad they've given up on the whole notion of candy.
I'm offended they even tried.
Yeah.
And by the way, they didn't say they gave up on it. They're just giving up on it in the U.S. They're still going to try and do it
right.
in Europe.
They're still doing it in Europe, exactly. Yeah.
Because they don't have candy in Europe, apparently. Yeah. Maybe Nestle should talk to them a bit.
Maybe Disney needs to get off their butt and do that candy-based racing game.
Yeah, I was about to say,
Ralph.
You know.
Yeah.
Sugar Rush. It's Sugar,
Sugar Rush.
There's no, but there's no candy in the title. Well, you could always put
right.
Sugar Rush, Candy Racing, you know. And
exactly, yeah.
Speaking of legal stuff, we'll move on to the next item. Go ahead, Jordan.
Nintendo wins 3DS patent dispute. This comes to us from Games Industry Biz. Nintendo has emerged victorious in their latest patent dispute. The company today announced that the International Trade Commission denied claims from a trio of outfits alleging that the 3DS and DSi infringed on their patents. Nintendo noted the three companies, Technology Properties Limited LLC, Phoenix Digital Solutions LLC, and Patriot Scientific Corporation, are all patent licensing operations groups that make money licensing their patent portfolios, but don't actually use them to make products.
Basically, they're cyber squatters. That's what
they're cyber squatters. We're very pleased with the commission's determination, which confirmed the judge's finding that Nintendo products do not infringe the asserted patent, said Nintendo of America VP and Deputy General Counsel Richard Medway. Nintendo's track record demonstrates that we vigorously defend patent lawsuits, including cases in the ITC, when we believe we've not infringed another party's patent. Nintendo continues to develop unique and innovative products while respecting the intellectual property rights of others. Nintendo has publicly touted a series of patent suit victories over the past decade, many of them directed at the company's successful DS, Wii, and Wii Fit products. However, the company's track record is not unmarred. Last year it lost a suit over the 3DS brought against it by former Sony inventor. A jury awarded the inventor $30.2 million in damages, an amount a judge later deemed excessive and cut in half.
I want to know if this Richard Medway guy said it with a straight face when he said Nintendo continues to develop unique and innovative products while respecting the intellectual property rights of others. Did he really say that with a straight face?
I expect he did. I said it with a straight face.
I was going to say, you hinted at it. Technology Properties Limited LLC, Phoenix yes. Digital Solutions LLC, Patriot Scientific Corporation. Those sound a lot very, very suspicious, and very euphemistic.
It sounds like a front for the mob is what it sounds like. Yes.
I love technology.
Technology Properties Limited?
Really?
So here's a story. A friend of mine years and years ago invented a company because he wanted to sign up for business discounts at various stores. There was no actual business behind this. But he had all the paperwork. So if somebody said, hey, we want to see your business license, he could provide a business license and then he could buy stuff at wholesale. The only reason this company existed was to get corporate accounts and get stuff cheap. The name of the company was Reliable Fabrications.
Or Unreliable Fabrications, whichever you want. But now getting back to this, Nintendo could not afford to lose any more money at this point. I mean, if they had somehow lost this suit, which doesn't seem like there was any danger doing, they would have been in deep trouble.
Right, exactly.
Because I think they're still bleeding money. I mean, they keep on lowering their expectations. I don't know what their expectations are now, and I don't know what their future is.
Their sales keep getting dropped, and of course, their executives have taken a huge pay cut.
Yeah.
So,
but the 3DS is the only thing that's really been selling well, and even that's starting to slow down because there's just so many 3DSs you can sell.
Right.
I might get a 3DS. I mean, they have a new I think there's a price cut coming, and they're going to bundle it with Pokemon XY. So I know all the Pokemons are the same, but at some point I just have to get back in and remember why I get bored of it after a few weeks.
I made the decision after the DS and the Wii not to give Nintendo any more money.
Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Layoffs at Sony Santa Monica, and this comes to us from Games Industry Biz. Last month, the Sony Santa Monica buzz was about the studio's potential for expansion, but today's news is instead about contraction. Sony Computer Entertainment of America has confirmed to IGN that it has instituted a round of layoffs at Sony Santa Monica. SEA can confirm that we have completed a reduction of workforce at Sony Santa Monica Studio. The statement read, "This is a result of a cycle of source realignment against priority growth within Sony worldwide. We do not take these decisions lightly. However, sometimes it's necessary to make changes to better serve the future projects of the studio. We have offered outplacement services and severance packages to ease the transition for those impacted." IGN first reported the cuts through unnamed sources and said there were indications that one of the studio's projects was canceled as a result of today's layoffs. Sony Santa Monica is best known for the studio behind the God of War series, including last year's God of War Ascension, but it has also provided office space and support for a variety of other developers and projects, including Giant Sparrows, The Unfinished Swan, and Superbots, PlayStation All-Stars, Battle Royale. I thought that Sony Santa Monica did the All-Stars Battle Royale, not hosted it.
They collaborated on it with Superbot.
Yeah, I mean, that was a disaster. Here's the thing, Sony, listen, we know you want to imitate Nintendo, but your audience is not the same as Nintendo's audience by any stretch of the imagination. And really, no one cares if they want to see, I forgot his name. The star of Uncharted. I can't believe I forgot.
Nathan Drake.
Yeah, no one wants to watch Nathan Drake fight Solid Snake, you know, or anything like that. I forgot which characters were doing. There's a problem, right?
Well, and here's the thing is that it was a blatant ripoff of Super Smash Brothers, and I'm going to be the heretic on the podcast again and say Super Smash Brothers was not a very good game to begin with.
But you know, it's for kids, and you know, you can't falter for that.
Right.
I mean, if you want to mash the button, that's fine. You know, and I've watched my cousins play, and they have a lot of fun with it. So, you know, it may not be a good game, but it's good enough.
Yeah, so I really wonder what's going on at Sony Santa Monica, because usually when you have big layoffs like this, it's after a game has come out, right?
God of War Ascension was a disaster, though.
Exactly. The God of War Ascension was a disaster, but Sony Santa Monica was also working with Ready at Dawn on the Order 1886, which just had its big reveal. It's the next big PlayStation 4 exclusive, so... I don't know. You know, it seems strange. Of course, Ready at Dawn, I'm sure we'll be able to finish the project.
Well, but, Sony had a big month in January. I mean, they should be flush with cash. I mean,
you'd think they'd be flush with cash, and they just sold, you know, another 330,000 in the Japanese PlayStation 4 launch.
Yeah, well, that was today, isn't it?
That was over the weekend. Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was today.
No, it was Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Yeah.
The numbers are in. They sold around 330,000 over the weekend.
Pretty good for considering it's Japan. The thing is, you know, it's funny is that the Japanese seem to be very interested in Titanfall, and I don't blame them because it's giant robots duking it out, and you really can't go wrong in Japan with giant robots. You know,
I know.
And here's the thing: something that Respawn was denying was that there would be kaiju. You know, giant monsters. They have them in the background, like way off there.
Right.
But you have to. If they're going to go after Japan, they're going to have some sort of DLC which allows you to fight monsters while fighting with giant robots.
And you need to be able to play as the giant monsters as well.
Well, definitely, yeah. It has to be. Yeah. You know, it's just like Left 4 Dead, except with giant robots and monsters.
Right.
Anyway, getting back to this. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know what to think of it. You know, and it, they say that it's a realignment against priority growth areas within Sony worldwide. I'm trying to figure out what they mean by that. Are they back other projects?
Sony has been losing money, so they're having to, cut back in various areas. I think that, you know, Sony Santa Monica just happened to be the short man on the – get the short end of the stick because, like you said, the last God of War didn't really go anywhere. So
they're doing this major project.
Yeah.
And I doubt the major project is the one that's canceled. It was probably a secondary project that's sort of smaller.
Right.
What else has Sony Santa Monica done? They didn't do Jack and Daxter. That was that was the other company. Maybe it was Jak and Daxter.
I'm looking at a list of their games now. It's mostly God of War, Pixel Junk, Shooter, the Twisted Metal remake, Journey. They did Journey.
Oh, you know what? I'm willing to bet you it was another Twisted Metal game. The problem with that was that game bombed.
Right.
So it might be easier for them to cut their losses with, Sweet.
If you look at the last couple of years, PlayStation All-Stars Battle Royale, God of War Ascension, Hokum, which just looks terrible, The Order 1886, Everybody's Gone to the Rapture, which they're working on with the Chinese Room, and some quote-unquote unannounced game.
Yeah, but you know what? They're going the Rapture game with the Chinese Room. It's mostly with Chinese Room's money, you know, and Chinese Room. Now, for those of you who don't know, they're responsible for such games as Esther, Dear Esther, and other venture games. So it's whatever money that they can't get, they'll probably can get on Kickstarter.
Basically. Yeah. So the whole source for the unannounced title was a tweet, an official PlayStation tweet that says, fun fact, Sony Santa Monica, Media Molecule, and Naughty Dog are working on unannounced PS4 titles.
Okay, well, I'm pretty sure one of those unannounced is no longer being developed. I mean, there's
I think that's a fair bet. Yeah.
But you know, I'm willing to bet. I'm not willing to bet, but I'm willing to guess that it was Twisted Metal, another Twisted Metal game. Because that was a franchise that was huge on the PlayStation 1, right?
It was huge on the PlayStation 1, and it hasn't been really a good game since Twisted Metal 2.
But the thing is that, you know, it's sort of like a franchise that they might want to try and resurrect, you know. So.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
The original guy worked on the PS3 version of Twisted Metal as well. So it's like, it wasn't for lack of creativity, because the same guy who did the first one did this one, you know.
Yeah, I still have the original Twisted Metal and Twisted Metal 2.
Oh.
Twisted Metal 2 was 1996.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, there. Now ago. You can feel old again.
Yeah.
Anyways, we're going to move on to listener feedback. Go ahead, Jordan.
From Pavel Predke. Hey, guys, I'm back from commenting retirement, forced to do so once again by your grim opinions of my favorite console.
Uh-oh.
At Vita. The Vita isn't going anywhere. While I already said I partially agree with Jordan that there is no constant flow of exclusive games, I still can't say that this means that there's nothing to play on the Vita, especially now with the cheaper version and the PS4 remote play. People will think again about buying one. Heck, if Joan is considering getting one, maybe. By the way, here's a link. There's crapware, but sure, there's at least a dozen perfectly good big games.
We already said this. Jordan's already played all the perfectly good big games on.
I also think Borderlands 2 isn't really a system seller, but it's a well-known title that will make people look at the Vita, and I believe that once you play it for a while, you realize how good of a system it really is for on-the-go gaming.
You know, I played Borderlands 2. I really didn't have fun with it as a solo player. And
I enjoyed it. I need to go back and do the DLC. I haven't done co-op.
Or else it's not that much fun. I mean, how is multiplayer on the Vita anyway?
I wouldn't know, because I've never actually been able to successfully join a multiplayer game.
And not even like ad hoc.
Well, ad hoc requires somebody around you to have a Vita, which
I know. I just realized
lots of luck.
That's the problem right there.
So. You know, the Little Big Planet supports online play. When Little Big Planet first came out, I would search for online players, and there would be, you know, at any given time around 600 people playing the game globally. And you'd try to join a game and it would drop, or someone would try to join my game and it would drop. So I really can't speak to the multiplayer on the Vita.
By the way, when I said I was thinking about getting one, keep in mind, if I'm getting one, the system's already dead. See, that's the problem right there. You know, I'm dreamcasting it.
Jonah buys dead systems, yes.
I bought the Xbox One. Don't say that. Well, the Xbox 360 I bought, and it lasted a lot longer than I thought it would. But anyways,
at PS Now, obviously people will in general not pay a subscription to play PS1 games, but PS3, I bet there are many people who would rather sell their PS3 and get PS Now for PS4 than keep the two consoles. It's obvious to me that Sony shouldn't be aiming at the latest releases to be available via PS Now. It's going to be tough, but if they play it right, they might be able to pull it off. I wonder if the games people own digitally will be available via PS Now for free, also the ones obtained from PS Plus.
You know what? I was just thinking, what if they did do day one free on a second tier game?
You know? I think that would be fine. Or, you know, what I'm hearing from the beta crowd on PlayStation Now is that it's basically Netflix for games. You pay a subscription fee, and here's a bunch of games.
But that's what I meant. You know, suppose you had a second tier first party game that's sort of like, let's say it's sort of like Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare, right? It's like a second tier game, but free. I mean, people, you know, it'd be a new game, right?
Right.
So it wouldn't be some old stuff that didn't sell well and now they're trying to get rid of.
I think, you know, from my own experience, the one thing keeping me from boxing up the PlayStation 3 and moving it into the bedroom is that there still isn't any good media streaming on the PlayStation 4. So it's not the games that are preventing people from boxing it up and putting it away. It's the other content that's out there. I've burned through the PlayStation 3 games I'm interested in. I have no really real need to keep it around for the gaming aspect of it, but I'm keeping it around for the media aspect of it, which cannot currently be duplicated on the 4 or the Xbox One. So the last piece of Paolo Predke's comment here, at question of the week, I didn't really introduce anyone to video gaming. However, I convinced two friends to get a PlayStation Plus subscription for their PS3. I guess this counts. I also introduced some friends to board gaming, and we meet regularly to play, but it is easier since it's intrinsically a more social activity.
No. I don't count the PS subscription. I do count board gaming. Yes, that definitely counts.
Yeah, selling somebody on PlayStation Plus is just an upsell. That's not introducing somebody to gaming.
Yeah, but board gaming, you know, especially... And the thing is that I find that when video gamers start board gaming, they start gravitating to board gaming. It's sort of like multiplayer, but live and in person.
Right.
And also, you know, the thing is that there's something about being able to pick up your pieces and do things with it and also taunt people face-to-face and know that they don't have the anonymity to hide behind.
Cards Against Humanity.
No, with me it's more like Pandemic and Shadows Over Camelot. So from Alpha Shard, hey guys, don't have too much to from Alpha Shard, hey guys, don't have too much time to add, but I'll answer the question of the week. I think I can say my wife had introduced our daughter into gaming. She loves to play Minecraft, Sims, Fable, and other webcased games. Great show, guys, and keep up the good work. I also like when you have a 3-man team going with Paul or Dan. Yeah, and I think the tie-in with Minecraft, Sims, Fable is that they're all creative-based games. And, you know, actually, the Lego movie, the video game, is actually getting positive reviews, too.
I haven't seen any reviews of the game, but, you know, the Lego games historically have been very good up until they wear out their welcome, right? You know, they're fine up to a point, and then it's just too much, and then, you know, so on and so forth. But Lego Marvel Super Heroes was very good.
Yeah. So the question of the week this week is, what was your favorite coin-op arcade game? And go ahead, Jordan.
Ooh, there's a couple of very good coin-op games.
Well, I assume you're going to go straight to iRobot, though.
iRobot's an excellent game. I think, you know, there are a couple of games that I mastered, and those games were I could put in one quarter and stay there until I got tired or bored. And those two games are Scramble.
Yes.
And Kangaroo.
I remember that. And the thing is, I was very good at Kangaroo too. And I always liked the thing is, it was the first time I ever heard that tune. Do, 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 do.
Yes. Do, 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 do. Yes, absolutely. Both of those games are very good. I think my favorite arcade game of all time is Dragon's Lair.
Oh, you know, I was about to say Dragon's Lair because Space Ace, because both games I mastered, and usually a crowd would come up around me when I was playing either game, especially when I was playing the Space Ace level of difficulty on Space Ace, because it had the ship battle and the roller skates, right, and all that stuff. And I would experiment. Yep. You know, one game I would just see how long I can remain as Dexter. You know,
and wasn't really duplicated at home for a very, very long time.
Yeah, I actually played Dragon's Lair 2, but it was the home version, and I just could not play it because the feedback of the controls wasn't good enough. So all I ever got to see was Daphne's mother going, "Kidnapped? My Daphne kidnapped?"
Did you ever play the Sega hologram game that was done the same way as the Dragon's Lair game? That was interesting.
It wasn't as intuitive. There was also Cliffhanger, which was I learned from a Japanese anime, the thing of Caligroso and Lupin and all that stuff. It was the weirdest, wildest thing, and it had some really gross parts that you could never get away with, like picking a guy's fingers off a windshield, you know?
Ew.
Yeah. And, you know, there's also, if you're going to stick with them, I didn't really like it, but you also have Mad Dog McCree was another LaserDisc game.
Right, right.
Actually, you know, one of the games, if we're going to go with LaserDisc games, there was one game which I loved, which I wasn't particularly good at, but I just loved it, was Cube Quest. It was basically sort of like Gyrus, except the backgrounds were LaserDisc.
Oh, okay.
I also was extremely good at that Firefox, which was a LaserDisc game as well.
Oh, yeah. I remember Firefox.
Yeah, and the other ship game, and I forgot what it was. It wasn't Space Harrier.
Based on the Clint Eastwood movie,
yeah,
wasn't it?
Well, very loosely based, thank goodness.
Yeah.
But, okay, so we're talking about traditional. Well, one game that I rocked at, it wasn't my favorite, but one game that I really rocked at that I was really good at was Bosconian.
I remember that one too.
But my favorite game, I guess, would be Venture.
Venture was very good. I enjoyed that a lot. Yeah, the different rooms, the different creatures, and yeah.
And the thing is, Winky was really slow, so you really had to be careful, especially the dragons and the Ettins. The dragons, the Ettins, I just wanted to murder.
Well, yeah, and if you weren't fast enough, then you got your room invaded, and yeah.
And the thing is that also you had to be careful where you killed them, because their corpse would slowly decay, and if you touched their corpse, you died.
Fatal, yes,
so
exactly.
If you killed them in, I have to leave the room because there's no way I'm going to be able to get through without one of the monsters coming in.
Or if you paint yourself into a corner and can't get out before the other beasties come into the room.
Yeah,
exactly.
You can't shoot them, you can't kill them. That's it.
Yep.
Oh, another game I really played that was really, really good was Frenzy, the sequel.
Yes.
Berserk.
Yeah.
That game. And the thing is, I love the fact that you could kill Evil Ed in it. And I killed him several times before I leave the thing. Or you just shoot in those rooms in which you had those little, you could actually shoot the walls.
Right.
You know, so yeah, I mean, there's a lot of games like Pleiades. I don't know if you ever played Pleiades.
I remember Pleiades. Sinistar was another good one.
Oh, yeah. And the thing is, Sinistar had the best demo mode because out of nowhere, I live.
Yes.
Saying that? Where's that coming from?
if you ever come out here to Portland, Oregon, I will take you to a barcade called Ground Control.
Well, actually, they have something called Barcade here, and it's called Barcade.
Oh, it's called Barcade there.
The problem is that one of the problems with the barcades is that their machines are always in miserable shape.
The one here is they actually are in fairly decent operation. They have an upstairs that's all pinball.
The one game that I really, really rock at, and I know it's a little bit of a mainstream game, but the game I've always been able to really rock at is Ms. Pac-Man.
Ah, yes.
You know, that game. And the thing is, I want to play well, but I never can Pac-Man Jr.
Was that the one that had the pinball at the bottom?
Baby
or that was,
no,
that
Pac-Man
was Baby
Jr.
Pac-Man.
Was the pinball machine, and Baby
right.
Pac-Man was the arcade game, was the coin-op arcade game.
Yeah, there was one that was half and half, that you had
that
a screen
was,
on top
was,
and pinball
Pac-Man
on the bottom.
That was Pac-Man.
Right, right.
Or was it Baby Pac-Man?
I don't remember.
Anyways, you were saying about your arcade.
So, yeah, we have a barcade here called Ground Control that has, you know, arcade games on the bottom and pinball on the top, and they keep everything in fairly good working order. It's a good place to go.
Maybe Pac-Man was the arcade game, so that means Pac-Man Jr. was the pinball machine hybrid. By the way, Super Pac-Man I could play for hours as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it was incredibly easy.
Right.
Anyways, by the way, there is a new Pac-Man. Pac-Man, not Pac-Man Tournament, but you know, you've seen it in bars, right? It's a four-player Pac-Man in which if you eat one of the Energizers, you could actually eat one of your other players, including the ghosts.
Yes, I saw the four-player Pac-Man, and I saw a six-player Sonic-themed air hockey table.
Oh wait, you know,
imagine an air hockey table shaped like a hexagon.
I almost forgot. I almost forgot this game, and you have to have a lot of quarters. Gauntlet 2.
Gauntlet 2 was classic.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I would always, I always played a mage. And the thing about playing a
wizard, shot of food.
No, it was even worse if I did a magic spell and that destroyed the food, all the food. But the thing is that in the original Gauntlet, you know, you didn't have a choice. It always had to be green elf, red warrior, blue Valkyrie, and yellow wizard, right? At least in Gauntlet 2, you can mix and match. And there was also some, you know, things like in Gauntlet 2, you had the dragon that you could kill and all that stuff, you know, and it had a lot more going for it. But, you know, when you heard that little tinkling noise, everybody tensed up because that stupid friggin' gnome was going to come and steal something. And God forbid it would steal one of your potions, you know, one of your potions.
Yep.
And people have fought over those potions too. Why did you take the shoot? You already have, you know, if I took the firepower potion, people get pissed at me because I already had the most powerful firepower. So even more better firepower. So anyways, yeah, so that's the question of the week this week is, what were your favorite arcade games? I might as well make it plural because you're never going to be able to say one of them.
And Gauntlet really introduced pay to play, right? Because as soon as you put a quarter in, your health was dropping.
Well,
you want more health?
That's
just
not
add
necessarily
another quarter.
True because every single Nintendo game had the put in quarter to continue.
Yeah, that's true.
But
yeah.
I mean, the
Nintendo games weren't actively killing you while the clock was running, right? In Gauntlet, your health continually declined unless you picked up food or whatever.
Which is why you could just
cut to the chase and put another quarter.
Which is why they had two high scores. One was high score and high score averaged off over quarters.
Right.
You know, and I was pretty good at extending my guy's life for a while, you know.
Yeah.
Although, you know, the best way to get people pissed off at you, wizard shot the food.
Wizard shot a food. Warrior is about to die.
Or I would get pissed off if someone shot the potion. Although sometimes you had to shoot the potion.
Needs food badly.
Yeah, and also you had dunin, 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 you know. By the way, the first arcade game that I ever loved was Asteroids. I mean, I actually played Space Invaders when it first came out, which dates me, by the way. But my favorite game when I was a really young kid was Asteroids.
Asteroids and Asteroids Deluxe both were very good games with this insane button layout on the board, right? It was not, there was no joystick, and so you had to control right, left, thrust, and shield and fire.
No, I never used the thrust. I played just fine. And yeah. You seldom ever use the hyperspace. Yes. Of course, if you want to go with insane button, you know, layouts, then there's the two games that you really have to go to. And that's Defender and Stargate.
Defender and Stargate, exactly. Yes.
But actually, their button layout was a little more logical, though. You know.
Yeah.
That was that's our question of the week. What's your favorite coin-op arcade game? We hope to have a lot of responses. If you don't respond, you suck.
If you don't respond, you never played arcade games, and why are you even listening to the podcast?
Because it's the video game. Actually, no, it's a gaming podcast. So I guess it's all inclusive. Anyways, we'll see you next week.
Oh, good night, everybody.